did an internship for ESPN's Wide World of Sports, which was formerly known as Disney's Wide World of Sports. So you're kind of treated like a Disney employee, but very different. You provide medical coverage for the athletic venues that go on there. And so it's ridiculously cool venue spot where they have all these fields, and each day they have various sports. A lot of them are the Amateur Athletic Union. They have like their, it's a lot of club sports, like club sport volleyball, track and field club, basketball, like club basketball. They go down and they do their national championships there. And so I was a summer intern. They have summer, fall, and spring interns. And so during the summer, you get a lot of like the national championships. So you're sitting covering like four basketball games at one time for all these kids, and it's just a mess. And it's so much fun because these kids get injured and you just are exposed to so many things. And then you get to do fun things like go to the park, which is great. And it's a really cool experience. The venue is beautiful. There's like some crazy Disney rules, which I think I signed my life away. I can't like talk about, but like one of them is you can't really like eat in public. Like you can never really see like a Disney employee like eating in public, because it's just one of the magical things at Disney, I guess. Employees don't eat. So it was a really cool experience. Yeah. You get to meet some really cool athletes. So like professional softball was there when softball was still an Olympic sport, and they have the Atlanta Braves. Their minor league team is based out of there, and then they go there for spring training. So you get to kind of rub some elbows with some big shots that roll through there, especially because with the AAU basketball club championships that they have there, like all the college recruiters come out. So like you're meeting like head coaches from like Duke, and you're meeting all these really incredible people just as they come out and watch some basketball, and you're kind of sitting there on your taping trainer's table and like taping up some ankles and helping people keep playing. It's a lot of fun.
So your internship, was it through the university?
No, at the time it was, yeah. For my undergrad degree, I had to do an internship to be completed, and that could be kind of whatever you wanted. And so I went through to Disney, and I interviewed, and I applied and interviewed and got accepted. And so you were contracted at the time through South Lake Hospital, which is just one of the hospitals in Orlando. I think that contract has since changed, so I'm not quite sure that true nature of the internship program right now, but because I haven't caught up with them this past couple months, but it typically is contracted through a hospital that you would apply through, and then you'd be positioned at ESPN to work.
Gotcha. And to do that internship, did you have to be in graduate school, or was that
undergrad? No, so you have to be done with the majority of your classwork. So I had finished all my classwork, and it was just the last thing I did to graduate. We had a couple master's students who had completed 1 year of their master's, but still had another year to go. And then we had some of the undergrad students as well who had completed 3 years of undergrad, but still had a year to go. So depending on like where you are and how well you do on your like application and on your interview, they kind of accept you based on their needs and your needs and how qualified you are. So it's something you can do during school at the end or close to the end.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. I can't recommend it enough. It was one of the coolest experiences.
All right, so we're talking with Kevin Maloney. He was talking about how he worked at Disney. We're going to be talking about blood flow restriction in just a second, but we actually planned on taking a field trip to Disney, and I mentioned, and then Kevin mentioned he worked at Disney, so then we just started the conversation, and I figured it was a great opportunity with the students here to see some of the different ways, different places that athletic trainers work, different experiences you get to have. And you know, like you said, you can work at Disney and work with Duke and work with Atlanta Braves and you know, work with little kids and everything like that. So very cool experience.
Yeah, the Special Olympics are hosted there. The cheerleading national championships are hosted there. So you'd see a variety of athletes walk through the doors. And I think that's what was probably one of the most fun. It's like the diversity of it's not like baseball season. It's every season and combined into one. So great stuff.
Very cool. So this episode, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bloodflow is where you'll be able to find this. I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, we've got
Daniela,
Joshua,
Juanita,
Tiana.
All right. So, Kevin, feel free to throw out Disney comments whenever you want, because I think they really enjoy that. And they were talking about how awesome the Harry Potter world is. So
it's pretty good.
It's actually, I changed the travel plans because my wife was like, if we're going to Disney, then we have to go to Harry Potter, because we've watched the movies, and now she's reading the books, and then now we're watching the movies again after she reads the books. So yeah, we're definitely gonna have to go to the Harry Potter
world.
It's
magical. You have to try the butterbeer. It's pretty outstanding.
I'm sure she will. Does it taste kind of like root beer?
No, it's no? kind of like cream soda, but it's fully loaded, like a lot of caffeine in there, I'm sure. But the calories don't count because it's magic, so it's magic, fine, right? It's totally worth it.
Because you don't eat in public, right?
Yeah.
All right, so without much further ado, we're going to get right to the topic. Tiana.
Kevin, would you please tell us a different part of your athletic training story?
A different part, yes. Okay, so we talked a little bit about Disney, but I want to hit on that again, just because I had a really cool story happen. So I actually was treating a wrestling tournament there that was going on, and I think that was the hardest part of my athletic training career so far, was covering 5 days of wrestling day in and day out, covering 3 mats at a time. You'd have several athletes go down and be injured and not knowing how well that they were going to do, and say an athlete had a concussion and you don't really get to follow up with the athletes very well doing venue covers as an athletic trainer. So that to me was probably the toughest week of like having all this care for the athlete's well-being and then really not getting to follow up and say you're not safe to return to sport, like you just had a concussion. So for me, that was like a time where I almost was like, I'm not sure if I'm ready to be an athletic trainer. I was so scared for like the athletes and my ability to pull an athlete from the sidelines. So to talk about that aspect of it, and then let's see, I think the reason why I got into athletic training and then also physical therapy is because I wanted to have the skill set and an athletic trainer to like handle the acute crisis, but also the relationship. And that's something you don't quite get with physical therapy. Sometimes with physical therapy, the patient's there for an hour and you do see them for sometimes months on end. But as an athletic trainer, the relationship you have with the student athletes is unlike any other. And I think that's the big reason I was like, oh, the athletic training profession has so much going for it, because you're not going to build relationships like that anywhere. That trust is so worthwhile to me, that's one thing that just really drew me to athletic training and to stick with it and continue to fight for those athletes that deserve like the best healthcare that we can provide them. So sorry.
All right, very cool. So we're talking about blood flow restriction. Can you define blood flow restriction therapy?
Yeah, so blood flow restriction training is the occlusion of blood to a limb through the use of a tourniquet, particularly during exercise. So what you're looking to do is you use a tourniquet that is placed around the proximal arm or the thigh, the upper part of the limb, to try and cut off some of the arterial blood flow, so the blood going down into the limb. And then with that, you get these insane physiological changes. So you're trying to take a little bit of oxygen out of the limb and then perform exercise with it on. And so it's something that's been well researched previously, but it quite hasn't hit the States as hard as it is right now. It's becoming very popular because of all the press that it's getting. It's been around Japan for quite some time, and it's kind of just making its way to the States. It's an extremely exciting intervention for rehab professionals based on the physiologic aspect. It's one of the best research physiological pathways that we have for some of the modalities that we're using in healthcare. So you use a tourniquet system that, as I said, it kind of looks like a blood pressure cuff that kind of wraps around the entire arm. It pumps up to a certain percentage to occlude part of the blood down to the limb. And so sometimes that scares patients. They're like, what are you going to do to my arm? Like, I'm going to lose blood flow. And you have to explain to them, you're only going to lose some. Like, your arm's not going to go dead. You're not going to have any nerve damage. But what we're trying to do is trying to trap, like, metabolites distal to that cuff. So we're trying to capture all like the lactic acid that you get when you exercise, so that way you have to recruit more muscle. And so when you recruit more muscle and you're building up all this lactic acid, your brain is like yelling at you saying, I'm working so hard, I'm lifting like a one repetition max bench press, like my muscle is going to rip apart, I'm going to be so sore from this. But that's only the thing is, you're working at a very low load. So you're working at a very low load, but you're getting all this muscle activation and you're recruiting all these fast twitch muscles. So what we're seeing is this insane increase in strength and hypertrophy of these muscles with very little training. So if you guys want to get big and strong and you start like lifting weights, it typically takes like 6 to 8 weeks before those muscles really build and you kind of start seeing those results. With blood flow restriction training, we're seeing hypertrophy in 2 weeks. And that is like unlike any other modality that we're seeing out there for recovering athletes.
So on that same note, if someone was to take steroids,
yeah,
how quick are they going to see those results? Is it going to be 2 weeks,
really
4 weeks,
good
6 weeks?
Question. No, steroids, huh? That's a really good question I don't have the answer for.
All right.
I guess maybe steroids would be as fast as blood flow restriction, but not the healthy way, obviously.
Yeah, right. Because then you're going to end up tearing your tendons and stuff. But
yeah.
All right, so continue. I'm sorry.
And yeah, no, that's a good question. I have to compare it to steroids now. Thank you. I have to look at the research for steroids. But so the reason why it does its job really well, and I kind of explained it, but when you put the tourniquet on and you have the patient exercise, that hypoxia, that lack of oxygen, it increases the lactic acid. It increases the fast twitch muscle fiber, which make your muscles burn. And people are like, okay, isn't that going to make you sore? But what makes you sore typically isn't the buildup of lactic acid in a workout. That typically gets reperfused through your system pretty fast. That's why you do like a cool down when you're working out. But with blood flow restriction therapy, you're working at only like a 2 out of 10 of max level of difficulty. So when you're doing bicep curls, say you lift like a 2 pound weight, you're like, oh, that feels like nothing. That's a 0 out of 10 weight. 10 is as much as I can lift. This is a 0. So maybe you go up to a 4, you're like, okay, this is around a 2. So as you do the blood flow restriction, you're lifting like a 4 pound weight. And as you go through the protocol, you start to feel this intense burning sensation, like you are lifting 50 pounds of weight and you can't, almost don't want to lift another one. And so it's almost putting you off because you're like, wow, this is a lot of work. I'm going to be really sore. But then as soon as we take that tourniquet off and the lactic kind of reperfuses and you get blood flow back into the arm, you feel just like kind of not much had happened. So what we're finding is that patients aren't getting sore. They're not getting like that delayed onset muscle soreness that typically occurs with regular lifting. So from a therapy standpoint, from an athletic training standpoint, it's extremely useful in helping an athlete return strength after surgery, or say they are just lacking some strength. It's a great way to get athletes strong.
All right. So is there a way we could simulate that here? So the students, like, could they grab their arm and lift? So, or does it not work this
way? Yeah. So they've actually looked at research because there's people are always looking for that hack, right? They're saying, all right, I don't want to buy a tourniquet system. It's expensive. What can I do on my own? So they've done studies based on trying to use like a compressive ACE wrap. So they would wrap like a tight ACE wrap around the upper arm and then they'd have them exercise. Unfortunately, that doesn't control the actual occlusion pressure and it doesn't control how much blood is going to the arm. And typically it's not as circumferential. So you can't quite get the same lactic acid buildup. So therefore you don't get the same results from just trying to, because people go to the gym and they like tighten a strap around their bicep and then they try and do it and it doesn't quite work. It ends up more or less hurting more than anything else because you might get uneven compression over potentially a nerve, which isn't an ideal situation. So I wish there was a way to recreate it, but I'd love to have you guys over to the clinic and try it because you're going to feel like you're working so hard, but you really are only lifting like 2 pounds. And it's incredible to feel so weak and feel like a huge workout without doing a lot of lifting activity.
So if we were to schedule a field trip, came over to your clinic, we could. Very cool. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, I think we're one of the only clinics in Houston that actually does this. And so we were trained through Johnny Owens, and he's been a big backer of this modality use in the States. He used to work for the Center of Intrepid, which is out in San Antonio, and he'd work with war vets. And so they would come back to the States with all this trauma and all this damage. And so what he was finding was that there was really no way to get these war vets strong fast enough. And so he started doing his research and found that in Japan they were using this and seeing substantial changes in strength and then therefore into function and what these people were able to do. So he convinced the people over there to investigate and utilize it. And so he's been putting out a ton of research, and he's the one that trained us on it, and it's now an NATA approved CEU course. So it's being respected on a national level to say, hey, this is a modality that we should be paying attention to and looking into because it's based in research.
All right. So you're talking about you were trained from Johnny Owens, kind of the one of the big names in blood flow restriction.
Yeah.
Is there a certification, a test, if I just went and took the CEU course off the NATA and then bought the cuff, then I could do this or what?
Yeah. So he's the only one right now that you can actually buy the cuff through. He's got a nice little pocket on it. So if you actually, a specific type of cuff that we utilize, it's a first class medical device. And the reason why that is because there's built-in safety parameters. And there has to be when you're occluding somebody's blood, you have to make sure that things are done safely and appropriately. So he's the only one that's able to sell the Delphi. It's a third class tourniquet and it's a first class FDA regulated medical device. And so with that, if you wanted to do the certification course, it costs $650, and then the cuff on top of that costs around $5,000. Yeah, so not this is something you kind of have to get into heavily. And so what we're finding is like all the college teams now are getting it. So before he had come to us, he was just at University of Florida teaching them to use it in their athletic training room. So you're seeing it more across the college and then also in the professional athletes. When he went out to spring break and was teaching all these teams how to use blood flow restriction training. It's a way to get your athletes back faster as far as strength goes. So it's if you bring them to you, like have them come in and do it like we did, we brought Johnny to us, it's a different price. But he takes you through an immense amount of training. So it was a little over 8 hours of one day to go through the actual understanding of the device and then also getting a chance to use it. So you're sitting in a classroom all day and you're learning about this insane device and you're like, this can't be real. And then you actually put it on and you're like, wow, this is kind of as cool as it seems. And you don't really understand what it's going to do to your patients until you actually have a patient recover and change their therapy based off this one modality. And I don't think I've had, I've been as excited about any other kind of modality out there as I have been this one recently.
Okay, so does, would someone have to have any sort of credentials before they take that course? Do they have to have a background in athletic training?
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Something like that?
So he's doing it for athletic trainers, for physical therapists, and for occupational therapists, as well as doctors as well. And as I said, right now he's pretty popular. He's doing a lot of work and traveling a lot and teaching people about this device. And I think the results stand for themselves in the research that he's published and the research that's already been done. As I said, it's been very well researched in Japan and mostly in healthy individuals, but overall we're seeing that as we're getting this more involved in post-operative and patients of physical therapy, wow, we're pretty impressed with the results so far.
So if someone, a personal trainer, tries to do this at the gym, then then they're probably not certified.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, you're gonna try and see those hacks of like people trying to strap or the ACE wraps, and they're not gonna get the same results and potentially set themselves up for damage.
Yeah.
If you're not, the thing that is really cool about the cuff is that as you're exercising, as you're moving, the cuff pressure adjusts to adjust for that. So it takes into account what your tissue is doing, and that's what makes it so expensive, but also safe. Because if you do just kind of strap on there as hard as you possibly can, you're likely going to occlude more blood than you'd like. And you could get venous congestion, which is not okay, and a whole arterial poor flow to the distal limb, which is also going to lead to potential cell death. So it's one of those things where it has to be controlled for and has to be used appropriately.
Gotcha. So as athletic trainers, we have to listen to our athletes if they're talking about, yeah, you know, I had this band wrapped around my arm as I was working out, and now I feel like I'm stronger. We need to be able to educate them. And then, so here's a great resource. So talk a little bit more about your expertise in blood flow therapy or treatment. Sorry.
Yeah, of course. So we were trained on it this past summer. And as I said, we're the only clinic that does it at my facility. I'm been the one that's been educating the other clinicians who haven't gotten certified on it. So Johnny took a small group of us to educate us on its use and when we'd be able to get it. And kind of the big talk was when the big article about Clowney came out. And that's when our lead surgeon was like, hey, we need to get this here for our patients, all of them. They should be utilizing this. And so from that standpoint, it was a resident at the time, and the director of our research kind of invited all the residents to come so that way we can kind of grow and explain this modality to others. And so from there, I've been putting together a system-wide for Memorial Hermann, the education content to understand the modality and to be able to use it as well. So being able to understand why it is what it is and how it works and how the you get an increase in lactic acid, but then you also get increase in growth factor and increase in growth hormone and all these other chemical changes in your body that occur that allow for these results. So I guess why I can talk about this so well is because I've been the one researching it most through for Memorial Hermann, and we're undergoing research now. So the same surgeon I talked to you earlier about that's doing the knee study, he's interested in now starting another study, specifically those for the blood flow restriction therapy on postoperative shoulders, knees, and elbows. So it's kind of an exciting time to be building up that research, organizing the literature there, and then putting the protocols forward. The Department of Defense has also reached out to Memorial Hermann and to see if we would like to be a part of their larger study on post-operative hip fractures for a set patient population to see how patients do after they have a hip fracture compared to those blood flow versus not. So the research now that we're starting to get enrolled in is pretty exciting going forward with the blood flow restriction.
And what has your research in blood flow restriction shown?
Yeah, so within 2 weeks, 2 to 4 weeks, you're going to get potentially up to 20% increase in muscle hypertrophy and strength. And that's, as I said, typically occurs 6 to 8 weeks. So this is kind of moving at a faster pace than the body would normally do so. And that's kind of the exciting thing is when you have an athlete that just had surgery and you can see the quads start to atrophy and they're not able to do much, that's a concerning thing for all therapists. And we're all trying to get our patients strong again to get back to sport. And so what this research is showing is that it would be so nice to have an athlete come in after surgery and not have these impairments in strength as nearly as significant as before. Like, for example, we had, just anecdotally, we had a patient who we'd been seeing her for 4 months, and she would get on the Biodex, and we'd run our Biodex test, and we'd see how strong she was, and she wasn't increasing in strength. And no matter what we did, it just wasn't happening. She was still staying at this huge quad deficit. We give her blood flow restriction over the course of 3 weeks, and her quad improvement improved by 30% strength. So an athlete that we would have been kind of banging our heads against the table with for so long, trying to get her back to running, for say, we're now saying, okay, we're ready to run. Like, you have demonstrated the significant improvement in strength. You're moving much better as a result of that strength right now. So let's go out and progress you. So as far as what we're seeing right now in the clinic from patient to patient, I'm extremely impressed with it. Our research is going to be forthcoming in the next couple of months.
All right. So what is the ideal use for blood flow restriction therapy?
Absolutely. So what we're using it for primarily, especially because it's such a popular modality that you'd love to use on all your patients, but you can't. We have one cuff, so because it's a little expensive. So we're kind of reserving it for post-op patients who are really struggling, as I said, like the patient I just mentioned, who we've been treating her for a while, and we haven't gotten better with normal therapy. She's somebody that we need to try us on to see if we can get anywhere. I had an extreme case of somebody who had an acute compartment syndrome and fasciotomy, and he had significant muscle loss in his calf. And so it's been exciting to see girth changes in his calf for somebody that had previously been unable to get strong in his leg because his muscles had been so damaged from his previous work. So
it's always fun to see guys. You can, oh, yep, that guy had some sort of leg surgery or knee surgery because one leg is half the size of the other.
Yeah, exactly. And this kid, it's one thing that it's taken a toll on him psychologically as well. He's kind of tired of going to the gym and having one leg smaller than the other. So it's like, all right, I'm going to be honest, the evidence right now isn't there for this, but let's see what we can do. And he's been excited about the change that's happening as far as changes in muscle girth. And he feels like he's getting at least a little bit more normal in terms of strength and ability to do what he wants to do.
All right. So then what are some times you would not use this?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're right now reserving it for patients that are typically weak out of surgery, but anybody that has like an open skin wound or an open fracture is someone that we wouldn't use it on. Somebody who has sickle cell anemia, we wouldn't use it on. Anybody who has cancer or a tumor that's distal to the site. Anybody with severe hypertension, you don't want to mess with their oxygen if they have severe hypertension. So those outside of that, it's been very easy to use throughout. Some people I'd be concerned about using it with is somebody who has like a poor circulatory condition. So and those that are diabetic and has like peripheral neuropathy, those are changes in the body that sometimes you want to respect and not try this intervention on. But from that standpoint, we haven't had any issues with it and a majority of our patients, and we're being a little selective on it right now since we only have one device. But most of our post-operative patients are relatively young and healthy, and it's been fantastic to see the results.
And do you have any idea if there's a plan to get another device?
I'm not quite sure, but I have a feeling that as we continue to go forth and as long as the budget allows, I could see more of it rolling out. And as I mentioned, like, we're one of the only clinics that does it in Houston, but it is elsewhere. And as I said, it's a very large modality used in professional sports and college. So I think that not just us in our clinic, but other clinics of our system and then also throughout the nation, I expect that this will grow just based on the results alone. I don't see how it can't.
Have you heard of any high schools doing it? Because I mean, you know, there's some schools like maybe Katy High School here in Houston, that they have won, you know, state championships in football 5 out of 7 years or something like that. So they have a lot of money, or Paraland has a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I could see somebody just saying, yeah, you know, I'll pay $5,000 for this thing if it's going to make my kids stronger.
Yeah. If you're going to treat it like a college environment and you have the budget for it, I could absolutely see it rolled out to high school. It's not contraindicated on those that are in a high school age group. So if you have the budget and you get trained on it, I don't see why you wouldn't look to it. Maybe to make sure that if you wanted to go that far, you'd probably send some athletes out specifically to like a physical therapy center that does it to make sure, is this really what it's about? And make sure you feel good about it before you kind of get into bed with it, because that's a lot of money, mm-hmm. right? That's quite a bit of money. So it's one of those things you want to make sure that you feel good about. And I think I could see it in a high school setting. I think I could.
Provided they had the budget.
Provided the budget, I think as far as the research goes, it's been, to me, I don't want to plug in any device besides like my high-low table and then like the blood flow restriction tourniquet system. Like, I'd get rid of the ultrasound, I'd get rid of the E-stim, kind of those are my kind of style of practice. I'd get rid of those things and just plug in the BFR in my table and I'm kind of good to go.
All right. You said you wouldn't use it for sickle cell. Can you talk a little bit more about why?
Yeah, absolutely. When just because of the cell's ability to carry oxygen is already compromised, as a risk, I would maybe use it on a sickle cell trait patient, as long as they're not going through a crisis. But then it's absolutely a contraindicator for the sickle cell anemia patients because of how damaged their blood cells are and their ability to transport oxygen. The last thing we want to do is deprive them of more oxygen that could potentially lead them into a sickling crisis, which is not what we're looking for in therapy.
Gotcha. All right. So can you talk just a little bit more about maybe the research behind it?
Yeah, of course. So as far as what we're looking for specifically, so there's increased growth hormone and increased and growth factor. So those two growth hormones are due for muscle fibrosis and scarring after injury, and then also for protein synthesis, which comes from the mTORC1. So the mammalian target of rapamycin-1 complex. It's a very fancy name for...
Did you tweet that out? Tiana,
did you get all that? Could you spell that out? Yeah, it was it's a really fancy name for what we find that happens in this deprived state of oxygen. So when you get that mTORC1 to activate, you get an insane amount of protein synthesis, which is why we get the muscles bigger faster. We also get a little bit of myostatin decrease, which, have you ever seen one of those big bowls, like those big blue bell bowls? I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, but the big muscular bowls. Have you ever seen those?
Muscular bowl. Not that,
okay.
I know of.
I'll have to look it up for you and show you the picture. But they have decreased myostatin, which means that they have all of this muscle bulk. So if you look,
bull, like a cow, yeah. Bovine, yeah,
absolutely,
yeah.
So they have decreased myostatin, and what the BFR does is it decreases the myostatin to the exercising muscle, which also produces a great amount of change in the muscle's structure and tissue. And I think that's why more people would be on board with it, knowing that it comes from such a background where we understand more about what's happening physiologically.
All right, so it seems hard, like, honestly, like foam rolling just kind of became popular again here, but why is it taking so long for us to understand or to begin using this? Why is this so new here?
I really wish I could tell you. I kind of hit my head against a wall for not doing or knowing about it sooner. I think maybe availability or research or just exposure, especially like as you said, some things kind of come in and out. We talked about Biodex kind of being big, kind of going out and coming back a little bit. Same thing here. I think it's going to be one. I hope it's not one of those ones that's just a fad. We're seeing increased use right now of dry needling. Physical therapists are doing it across the nation in their mm-hmm. the respective legal states. And that is, research-wise, not as prominent as what we see with blood flow restriction. So I'd like to think that even though it's gotten to us late, that more people realize how beneficial it is and start to use it more and start to research it more so that way we can get our patients better faster. I think that's where I'd like to see it. I wish it didn't take us so long to start utilizing it, particularly in a clinic setting, but I'm hopefully optimistic that things continue to go smoothly with this intervention and we continue to see these great results that are literally doing a significant impact on our patients' recovery.
Okay, so probably not here, but at some of those schools where they may have this as an option, can you say, I'm the athlete and I come in and say, hey, Maloney, I'm looking at doing this blood flow restriction treatment. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, if I screen them out and we understood, like, typically there's some sort of therapeutic purpose that we're using it for. I'm not going to use it just to get you in better shape for the beach. Like, that's not my goal with it. My goal in using this device is for primarily rehabilitation purposes. And so I'd be absolutely, if you have a prescription for a doctor and we're seeing you for a medical issue and we're finding that there are impairments here based on strength and maybe muscle scarring after injury, I'd be all for using it. What we're finding is that you don't need to be on this intervention long for it to work. And it has, right now, it's shown to have lasting impact. So within, as I said, within 2 to 4 weeks, you're seeing muscle hypertrophy, which you get to keep that as long as you continue working out. What we're finding as far as, okay, let's compare blood flow restriction versus like high intensity interval training. Yes, high intensity interval training does get you a little bit more benefit, slightly more benefit as far as muscle activation. But that's also going to make you very, very sore, with blood flow restriction, you're not going to be sore from it because there's not that mechanical stress or mechanical load that's going to cause the muscle damage and healing that occurs those 2 days later. So just looking after the lactic acid, you're going to get both lactic acid with high intensity interval training and blood flow, but you're not going to get the mechanical stress and subsequent pain later from a big workout.
Okay, you said the treatments don't last very long. What does a normal treatment for you look like?
Absolutely. So say it's an ACL patient. If we're using it early in the post-operative, you use it on one body part per treatment session, or sorry, one muscle group each treatment session. So if we're going to go after the quad, we might do some straight leg raises. If we're going to go after the glute, we might be doing some side-lying hip abduction. If we want to go with their calves, say their calf atrophied, we'd go into some calf raises. And that would be where we'd go. We'd want to dose it appropriately. As I said, you want to work at a 2 out of 10 level intensity. So this is something you'd utilize at the end of a treatment session because it gets them very tired. It's been shown that after you do this, there is a decrease in muscle force production. So you're not going to follow it up with like Olympic lifts or plyometrics or agility work. This is something you reserve for the end and encourage the athlete that adequate protein intake is important to kind of replenish and build muscle and promote muscle healing. So for me, a typical treatment session is we'll warm up, we'll deal with any range of motion impairments, we'll go through a lot of neuromuscular work, we'll take them through functional activities like squatting and stepping up. And then for a pure strength standpoint, that's where I go. And once I get them kind of good and tired on the blood flow restriction training, I'll go into some balance activities because those are safe and they're not moving dynamically. So they're already in a fatigue state and we're working on the neuromuscular control. So that's typically when I'll start to utilize it. As I said, we reserve it for those that are having issues with muscle strengthening. But if we have more cuffs, I would love to almost make it a protocol that kind of every patient is on this to say, hey, we're going to make sure that we don't have any of those issues of we're 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out, 4 months out, and still having quad deficits. Now let's kind of hedge our bets and go early and just make sure that we're starting strong. And that would be great to see from my eyes.
So kind of what I'm hearing is if you were to see a patient for an hour, mm-hmm. then, you know, 45, 50 minutes of that would be the regular work. And then the last 10, 15 minutes yep. would be this.
Yeah. Typically for 3 exercises, it takes about 15 minutes for the blood flow tourniquet system to go through it all. So 5 minutes per exercise. And the reason why that is the protocol itself. So specifically in a treatment session that we use in the gym, it's a metabolite production protocol where we're trying to get that lactic acid buildup and they're trying to exercise with it on. So they'll go through, 30 repetitions of the exercise, and then they'll take a 30-second break, and then they'll do 3 sets of 15 with 30-second breaks in between. And what that typically comes down to is around 5 minutes is typically what we're looking for just one muscle group. And the good thing is, like, once you've done just that one exercise and fatigued out that muscle group with this, that's all they need to do strengthening wise that day. I don't need to hit it up or follow it up with any strengthening after that. So typically 10 to 15 minutes. What the research has shown is that it's almost more productive to do it 2 to 3 times a week as opposed to 4 to 5 times a week. We are seeing that the longer that you use it, the more benefits you get. So you're going to get a larger effect size and larger change with using it for 9 to 10 weeks versus 5 to 8. But you're still going to get a very large effect size using it for 5 to 8 weeks. And then, as I said, hypertrophy is actually going to come very much sooner than that. So within 4 weeks, you're already going to start to see muscle growth and muscle development. And then I guess as far as that goes, you progress with the patient. So each time you kind of check in and see what their RPE is, like how hard they're working. Like 0 to 10, 10 is you're lifting the most weight imaginable. 0, you're not doing anything. I want you around that 2 to 3. Where are you at right now with this weight? Okay. And then we adjust as you go each treatment session. And I think it's been a good protocol for us to use. There are other uses for it though outside of the therapy gym. So research has shown that simply putting on the tourniquet and not exercising at all reduces muscle atrophy. So they took post-operative ACL patients, approximately 20. They call it a cell swelling protocol, where they have the tourniquet on for 15 minutes set to a certain millimeters of mercury pressure. And the patient just hangs out on the couch, like our couch potato patients, they're recovering from surgery. What they found is that in the group that is just resting and no tourniquet, they have more muscle atrophy. And the group that uses the blood flow restriction, they can hopefully save off, they saw around 25 to 36% reduction in the atrophy compared to the control group. So we're saying you don't even have to exercise with this, but there is some benefit of just putting the cuff on. So say you have an athlete that has a setback. This is a nice intervention to kind of go back to. Say they are a patellar tendon graft that kind of has a little bit of patellar tendonitis, and you can't really do any of that dynamic work maybe that you were just working on. Well, let's take it back to the table and let's get you strong again. Let's just make sure, not get you strong again, let's just make sure we don't atrophy in the meantime, that we're waiting for this process to heal as we're doing other things to help that. So that's one use for it as well, outside of in the therapies, having the patient almost go home with a tourniquet system and training them on it and making sure that that's appropriate, because that's what the protocol had called for, was 2 times a day, 15 minutes each time, just putting a cuff on and hanging out. The research has been also proven to help with biking and cycling. So with biking, you put it on the proximal thigh, you actually get increased strength and hypertrophy, and you get cross-sectional area, so you're getting to see that muscular change, and you're also getting an increase in VO2 max. And typically what we'd think of is, it's not high intensity cycling either, you're working at like 40% of your VO2 max. And so what we're seeing with that, which typically isn't an activity that would cause those kind of changes, it's having those kind of changes in the muscle groups that it's working. And so that's kind of a cool place to explore as well. You'd cycle for 15 minutes at 40% of the intensity of your VO2 max. You've got the tourniquet on and you're just cycling. And then we can see within the research was 6 to 8 weeks that we get beneficial changes at working at a pretty low intensity. Same thing with walking. Walking is historically not something that you would get muscle strength or muscle hypertrophy out of. Right. You don't get strong just from walking. You have to do something to the muscles to make them strong. And so what we're seeing is with the tourniquet use, we are getting changes in muscle structure with it.
Okay, so I got two questions. The cuff is put proximal to the body part you're wanting to use, right?
Yes.
So you said if you wanted to work the glutes, how do you do that?
Yeah, I'm so glad you picked up on that, because the cool thing is that there's also proximal gains. So because there's change in the blood flow distal to the limb, you're also getting change in the muscles just proximal to the cuff. So you can get stronger in your core. So say like the multifidus, those kind of intimate muscles along the spine that stabilize it from shear forces. You can get those strong as well from doing bridges with the blood pressure cuff, or from the tourniquet on. It's not going to be as great as muscles distal to the limb or distal to the tourniquet, but we're still seeing changes in that. And I think that's also something very cool to note. And it's not just coming from 75 repetitions of doing an exercise over and over. It's actually from putting the tourniquet on, and we're getting proximal changes as well.
Gotcha. And then the other question, you said that the insurance, or you said basically sending them home. So is this something that insurance is paying for, is for the cuff?
That study was not done in the U.S., I'm pretty sure. So I'm not quite sure the policies on actually sending a patient home with it. I know I'm not going to loan a patient this cuff. But
right.
I think as far as if it was... I'd have to go back and read that study and see where it was done to figure out who sent them home with it. But it's a pretty safe device, as I mentioned, it's a pretty safe device to use. It's got inherent safety features where after a certain time it does turn off, because some of the risks are having the cuff set too high pressure wise and then also having it on for too long. So there's inherent safety features to cut it off when that occurs. So, and it's pretty simple to use. I haven't had an issue teaching our coworkers at the Ironman Center. I mean, they are smart people, but it's a pretty safe, foolproof machine to utilize. And you put the value in that you want the tourniquet to go up to, and then you set the timer for however long. And I, with that kind of in mind and teaching the patient a little bit here and there, I don't see why it couldn't be something that the patient could go home with if you have the access to all those cuffs.
Okay. Because I know that a couple years ago they had like the Game Ready.
Yeah.
That, you know, they were like, well, just get your... you know, get your orthopedic surgeon to write a prescription for this kid to have it, and then, you know, you can keep it after that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, if we could start doing something like that,
yeah,
that's great, but...
That'd be awesome. That'd be fun. I think this would probably be a little bit... It's FDA class one. It's going to be more regulated than that. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a certain time frame where, like, you can't just keep it like a Game Ready.
Gotcha.
It probably... I don't want to say like a loan system, but I feel like it'd probably go that route. Like, you have it for this amount of time, and then you would return it.
Gotcha. Very interesting. All right. Well, what else can you tell me about blood flow restriction?
Let's see. I feel like that hits on the heavy parts. The risks and contraindications we talked about, the indications, really anybody you're trying to get strong.
We talked about the physiological factors above and below.
Yeah, which is, to me, the coolest part is seeing a intervention like this that's so based in physiology, especially when we're starting to do more research and becoming more keen on what's working for patients and what's not. It's great to see this one kind of stand on its own as far as physiological changes.
So you, if you're working, you know, the one leg that has surgery, we always try to have our athletes work both sides.
Yeah.
And you know, there's also strength gains from working just one side.
Mm-hmm.
Do you put the cuff on both sides, or is it you just do the affected?
Typically just the affected. During that rest break that they take, because as I said, you do 30, and then you rest for 30 seconds, and then three sets of 15, each with 30-second rests. Why not have them work the other side? Like, all right, we're going to do some leg press here. All right, let's increase the weight during your 30-second rest and work the left side at a higher weight that would be more appropriate than the right side, your involved side, that's working at a lower rate. So there is time to kind of kill two birds with one stone, I guess. But typically, as far as the tourniquet goes, we'll just keep it to the involved side. That would be where that's how we're using it currently.
Gotcha. And then you did say that they could just go sit on a couch for 15 minutes and gain benefits. Mm-hmm. But when you're in clinic, this is a pretty hands-on modality?
As far as like a clinician standpoint?
Yeah, like you as the physical therapist, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to let you do your exercises and I'm going to come back, but you kind of have to stay right with them? Or?
No, you get a little freedom, especially if it's a patient that you've walked them through it and they've understood it. I don't ever travel far from a patient that is doing it, so I do tend to stay close to them. But there are some that I feel more comfortable with saying, okay, if there's ever an issue, here's this button, but I have to go check on another patient. But you're going to do your 30 repetitions and you're going to rest for 30 seconds. Then you have three more sets of 15 with 30-second rests. And as long as the patient understands that part of the exercise, I haven't run into any errors as far as using the device itself. And then when it does have an error, it shuts itself off. So it is something that I can walk away from some patients with. Some of them, if they're feeling uncomfortable about the intervention itself, I typically stay around and close with.
Okay. All right, so any other thoughts?
No, I think that about covers it. I'm just hoping that overall people look into it a little bit further and visit the website that I'll have posted for you guys about Owen's Recovery Science, because he's the big kind of spearhead for it, at least in the state of Texas, and getting everybody kind of up to par with it. I'm extremely excited that the NATA supports it as a CEU, and that athletic trainers can really give more to their athletes than they were able to, and really kind of take back some of the rehabilitation aspects of athletes. So I think that about covers it.
All right, owensrecoveryscience.com?
Yep.
All right, so very cool. I got that posted in there. That should be easy enough to follow, to find. I think it's a really cool, interesting topic. And again, I don't know that I'll ever see it here, but maybe at a workshop, or hopefully I can bring the kids out and see you. And so,
yeah, absolutely.
Most of the Houston area athletic trainers could probably do the same, give you guys a call and schedule something. So,
yeah, absolutely. Once you kind of see it working, it's not the most exciting because the patient's just exercising. But when you get a chance to try it yourself, you're like, oh, wow, I feel like I'm working really hard. And then not to have soreness, you're like, oh, I would like to work out like this all the time. So yes, it's exactly. A very interesting intervention.
Well, I don't know though, because the feeling sore afterwards is like, yeah, I worked good. So it's like,
if you like that, if you like that, if you like that, I guess I'm too high maintenance. I want to just go on and not be too sore. So
see, but I guess I don't know any better. So if I experienced it like you have, where you can work hard and not be sore, then I'd probably be in the same boat. So.
Yeah. Get a little lazy with your workouts. Don't do it. Don't do it.
All right. Well, Doc, Katmar, Blake, and Nia, thanks for joining us live in the chat there. Everybody, make sure you go to sportshealth.com. Again, sportshealth.com/SMB. Sportshealth.com/SMB. Enter the code for the month, Bubba, and then for April is Frio. So this episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bloodflow. This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bloodflow, blood flow. And that's where you can find the links and the show notes and the discussion topics from Kevin here. And I also have his email there, but why don't you go ahead and give it again?
Kevin.Maloney@memorialherman.org.
And it's two N's on Herman, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I typed it wrong and then it looked funny. All right, so memorialherman.org. I am Jeremy Jackson. This is Kevin Maloney, the resident PT at the Memorial Herman Ironman Sports Medicine Institute downtown in Houston. He's been in the profession as an athletic trainer for about 6 years, and he's also an adjunct professor at the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training. So lots of good knowledge coming from Kevin. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And that is a wrap.